babe. Call me when you wake up, no matter when.
Since the text felt urgent, I sat up against the fluffy hotel pillows and called him right away.
Abby.
Hey, what's up?
Are you already awake?
Rex was in the locker room. I could hear a metal door opening and closing and the sounds of his teammates. I just woke up and saw your text. Is anything wrong? I peered out the gossamer drapes. The sun was just waking up, too.
Your security team called me last night. They didn't want to wake you since you'd just gone to sleep. Your ex was caught breaking into your apartment last night. They think he was trying to set fire to it. He'd cranked up the gas and had poured gasoline on your futon and carpet.
I groaned, my forehead falling to my bent knee. Great. Just freaking great.
He's been arrested, but I think it's likely they'll ask that he not be released on bail given the circumstances. He'll be charged with, well, a lot. Attempted arson, breaking and entering, breaking the restraining order, and so on.
At this news, I sighed and straightened, trying to look on the bright side. Well, I guess that's not so bad. I hated that he'd broken into my apartment and poured gasoline on my things, but at least he'd be in prison for the foreseeable future. That made me breathe easier.
Sorry this happened,
he said. The background noise disappeared. I assumed he'd moved into a quieter room. It's not your fault.
What can I do?
Nothing, but thank you for calling. And thank you for the guards and just everything. I lifted my hand and then let it flop to my leg. I'll stop by before work and check out the damage.
That's the other thing. The landlord wants you to move out.
What? My eyes flew open. Are you serious?
Because of the damage to the carpet. He has to replace it and needs the place empty. He said he doesn't know when it'll be ready for you to move back in. Maybe after the lease is over.
That son of a blister. I made a fist in the bedsheets. He's the worst. Rex seemed to hesitate a beat before saying,
I have a place in Austin.
My brain stuttered. You have a place in Austin? Then why did I drop you off at a hotel that afternoon after you crashed at my place?
Everyone with the wedding party was staying at the hotel, and I didn't want to invite them over to my place. I keep it on the down low.
I chewed on the inside of my lip. Setting aside the fact that I was now technically homeless, moving into Rex's place in Austin would certainly solve a few problems. As far as everyone else was concerned, our marriage was authentic, and yet, as Walker had pointed out, we didn't live together. I guess, I started, frowned, picked an imaginary piece of dust off the comforter. Rex, if we're together, I mean, if we start seeing each other?
Yes.
Would we stay married? He was quiet for several seconds, then asked,
Have you decided?
I haven't, I said mournfully, because I felt mournful about it and frustrated with myself. I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry. No decisions have to be made right now. It can be as simple as you need a place to stay and my house is empty.
His response felt like no response at all. Did it make sense for me to move into his place in town? Would he live there too during the off-season, or wasn't that rushing things? And you'll have to put your nutty quilt collection into storage. No need to expose him to your crazy. When my silence persisted, he added,
How about you can pay me the same rent you paid at your studio apartment?
I perked up at this. You'd be okay with me paying you rent?
No, but I figured you wouldn't accept otherwise. And think about the fact that this thing with Declan is my fault. He left you alone before I entered the picture and preemptively paid him off without your blessing.
Despite myself, the uncertainty of my present circumstances, and the bad news of the morning, I smiled. You know me so well. Was all he said in response. Then he cleared his throat.
So, listen about the wedding this weekend. You don't have to go if you don't want to.
No, I do want to. I cut myself off before I said, I want to see you, because that didn't seem fair. I didn't want to give him mixed messages. I did want to see him, and after Kaylee's visit to the bar last week, I was 90% certain I would agree to give things a try with him. But there was still that 10% insisting he was simply just too good to be true, and I'd pay the price eventually.
Okay, good. It's in Allenbach,
Rex said, sounding pleased. That's right, I'd forgotten. Bernadette had sent the details over before Thanksgiving along with the outfit, tiny feathery hat included. It hung in my closet at my apartment. I hoped it hadn't been doused in gasoline.
We'll see lots of folks from high school,
he said. Yay, he laughed. No, it's fine. I waved my hand through the air even though he couldn't see me. I was quiet, not bullied.
Good. Glad I won't have to beat anyone up.
But there was this one guy who I liked, and he didn't even know I existed.
Sounds like an asshole.
I laughed, and the words slipped out before I could catch them. I miss you, Rex. He responded as though he'd been waiting for me to say them.
I miss you so much, Abby.
I closed my eyes and breathed through the thunderstorm of emotions, rocking and rolling in my body, making me warm and cold and heavy and light. Likewise, Rex didn't seem inclined to talk, and I thought maybe he was feeling something similar. Eventually, though, he cleared his throat and said,
I have to go. I'm needed on the field. Are you working tonight?
Yes, I'm working every night this week. I have the Christmas market Saturday before the wedding, and then again Sunday during the day.
I'll see you Saturday.
Okay, see you then.
Bye, babe.
Bye. We hung up and I stared at the screen of my phone unseeingly, feeling oddly light. For some reason, I didn't like saying goodbye first, but never minded that he did, especially when he called me babe. Rex surprised me by showing up at my Christmas market on Saturday. He caused quite a stir. To be clear, he caused a stir both at the market and all through my body, which had decided to riot as soon as he came into view. I stared at him, transfixed, as I circumvented the table, displaying my wares, unable to believe he was there with his sexy hazel eyes and adorable whisper of a grin, looking at me like I'd invented Christmas markets. What are you doing here? I'm sure my eyes had never been larger.
Do you have any giant, perfectly formed mugs?
He asked, his face as straight as a circle. That is to say, not at all straight. I threw my arms around his neck and hugged the heck out of him. We didn't get more than 2 minutes before my table was swarmed. I sold out of everything in record time, but we stayed until all the fans had their photos. Then the car he'd hired, a limo of all things, drove us to the hotel so we could get ready. We chatted easily the whole way, him telling me about work, practice, upcoming events, and me filling him in on crazy shenanigans at the bar. I didn't even care when he changed the subject after I asked him again what he wanted to do about our marriage. I felt lighter than I had in ages, filling my lungs and heart with buoyancy every time he smiled at me or called me babe. Please ignore all the boxes and junk. I finished moving out yesterday. My landlord's being a real turd about everything. I placed my key card on the table by the door and walked to the mini fridge to grab two waters. Since Declan had been arrested and subsequently denied bail, I was down to just one guard per shift. But Rex had sent Anthony home as soon as he'd arrived at the Christmas market, giving the man the rest of the day off.
This is all your stuff?
Rex accepted the water I handed over, his eyes inspecting the sum total of my belongings. Or almost the sum total. The studio is letting me store my supplies and inventory there, thank goodness. I had to trash the futon. None of the appliances were mine. but I still have my tall table and my quilts. How soon do you have to leave? Rex meandered over to my stack of quilts, rubbing one of them between his thumb and forefinger.
Have you given any thought to my place?
My lungs tightened with something hot. Yes.
What do you think?
I'd like to see it first. He glanced at me, a smirk on his face.
Afraid it's a dump?
No, but I don't know. I feel weird about kicking you out of your home.
It could be temporary if you want. Just until you get another place lined up.
He sounded so logical and reasonable about it. Okay, you're right. I can't stay here forever. I gestured to the suite. It was 3 times the size of my studio, but felt smaller to me for some strange reason. Or maybe it simply felt too vanilla, soulless, like it was trying to appeal to everyone's taste by appealing to no one's. Rex looked around again, and once more his attention landed on the pile of quilts.
Why do you have so many quilts?
I stiffened. I didn't discuss my quilt addiction with anyone. Deciding to steer the conversation in a different direction as quickly as possible, I asked, "Why do you have a place in Austin, so you can be close to your dad?" Now Rex stiffened and seemed to grow very still. His eyes still on my tower of folded blankets, he shook his head.
"No."
"How often do you see him?"
"Not very."
"Why? I thought he still lived in Allenbach. Will we see him today at the wet—" His eyes cut to mine, and there was no mistaking the bitterness there.
"I hope not."
Scrutinizing him, I rocked back on my heels. "Do you not want to talk about your dad?" He shrugged.
"There's not much to say. He's a worthless piece of shit. Everyone loves him anyway. The end."
I set my water down on my tall table, walked over to Rex, and wrapped my arms around him. His heart beat 2 times before he returned the embrace. "I'm sorry, I had no idea you didn't get along." Rex's throat bobbed, and he set his cheek on top of my head.
"I don't want him anywhere near you."
"Oh?"
"He'll hit on you."
I tilted my chin back and looked up at him. "He'll hit on me?"
"He always does."
Rex's eyes trailed over my face like he was memorizing it.
"He breaks up marriages, doesn't care. He
made a face. What?"
"Only loves himself and only cares about what people can do for him. He almost cost me my chance to play ball in college."
I gasped. "What?"
"He interfered with the recruiting process. Suggested to 2 of the schools he was open to bribes. Said he'd guarantee I'd take their offer if they paid him off."
"Oh my God." My arm slipped from his waist, and I pressed my fingertips to my lips. That's...
"I hate him,"
Rex said, with a vehemence I'd never heard from him before.
"I hate him. How he treats people. Like we're all here for his benefit and amusement. He cheated on his first wife with my mother, got her pregnant, then cheated on her. That's all he does. Cheat. But he was still my dad, you know. I thought he cared about me. He always used to say how proud he was. But when I found out... when I..."
Rex shook his head. His focus had turned inward, and I wondered if he knew where he was or what he was saying.
"I can't forgive him. And I hate that I didn't cut him out earlier. I should have known, but I made excuses for him. How he treats and talks about women. Locker room talk, boys will be boys, bullshit, I can't stand it. How he just cheats and takes. I hate him."
I placed a hand on his arm, and his eyes came back to me, widening and blinking before falling away. I could see he was embarrassed and surprised, I was also surprised by his overshare, and given the way he avoided my eyes and the pinkish-reddish color spreading up the back of his neck, it had been a scary overshare. Yet I was grateful for this window inside. I thought maybe I understood better why Clarence O'Day's words and treatment of the women in Rex's life had bothered him so much. But I didn't do scary overshares. Ever. Not even with Declan, which had been a source of constant irritation for him.
"Why can't you ever be vulnerable with me?"
he'd complain, before listing a litany of ways I had failed to open up. No intimate or embarrassing details, no nude pictures, no sexting. I simply did not do vulnerability. Looking at Rex now, how the red from his neck now stained the tips of his ears as he swallowed 3 times in a row quickly, his lips parting, then closing, as though he struggled to fill the silence, the urge to also share, specifically to overshare, something personal had me speaking before I quite understood what I was doing. "You asked about my quilts earlier?" His gaze flicked to mine, his embarrassment momentarily upended by confusion at my statement. "I collect quilts." He frowned. "But not just because I like quilts." I shifted from my left foot to my right, my heart jumping up my throat, my brain screaming at me to be quiet. "Ask me why I collect quilts."
"Why do you collect quilts?"
"My mom left everything to me when she died, but I lost most of it when the court ordered me to pay back the debts incurred during my marriage. It was all sold off in an auction, except for a few things, books and trinkets, which I was allowed to keep, and 2 lightweight cotton quilts." The wrath he'd worn earlier had been completely eclipsed by curiosity.
"So now you collect them? Because of your mom?"
I twisted my fingers. "Well, no. Kind of. But, one day, while I was searching for a blanket in a thrift store, I actually needed a heavy, warm one. I came across a quilt with patchwork dancers on the front, in the most god-awful orange and pink fabric, the colors brighter than sherbet. And I scoffed at how ugly it was before I noticed embroidery on the back. It was signed, from a grandmother to her only granddaughter, and I..." My throat closed up.
"You what?"
"I felt so sad." My voice wobbled, but I pushed through it. "This grandmother had made her granddaughter, her only granddaughter, this quilt. Picked out the fabric, probably hand-stitched it, cared about it, fretted over it, poured herself into it. And then there it was, discarded, in a thrift store. All that love just given away. Damn it." Now I was crying. Rex shifted closer, a warm smile invading his features.
"So you bought it?"
"I did. And ever since, I always look for signatures on quilts. If they're signed or inscribed, from mothers, grandmothers, sisters, friends, I buy them." I swiped at my tears with the back of my hands, not knowing or understanding why I was crying. It was so silly. They were just quilts. "I can't not buy them, Rex. They deserve a home. They deserve to give love in the manner in which the creator of the quilt intended." His hands came to my cheeks, and his thumbs wiped the trails of tears from my face. Then he bent and kissed both of my cheeks, the right one first, then the left. His hands remained as he straightened, his eyes shining down at me with admiration and love. My heart oddly full, I sucked in a breath and smiled. "And that's why I have 24 quilts. Chapter 24. When life itself seems lunatic, who knows where madness lies? Perhaps to be too practical is madness. To surrender dreams, this may be madness. Too much sanity may be madness. And, maddest of all, to see life as it is and not as it should be. Miguel de Cervantes Saavedra, Don Quixote. Rex had been giving me sexy eyes ever since I walked out of the bedroom wearing my outfit. Once again, I liked everything about it. A sleeveless green velvet tea dress. Underneath were layers of Christmas red tulle which made it stiffly flare. The scoop neck was a little low, but after that red silk dress I'd worn to the charity gala, this one felt positively modest. Completing the ensemble were red velvet high heels, black thigh-high stockings, and black velvet gloves. Oh, and that little hat, perched forward on top of my head such that the feathers stuck straight up and the fishnet veil covered just my eyes.
"You are exquisite,"
he said, giving my shoulder a kiss before placing my winter coat on my shoulders. "Thank you, it has pockets." He made a face as I turned, part frown, part smile.
"Why do you always say, 'it has pockets'?"
"I don't know. Because I think it's funny, I guess." I opened the door. I wouldn't tell him the truth. People always seem to get irrationally irritated with me when I confessed that compliments made me uncomfortable. They'd say something like, "Just accept it and say thank you." But accepting a compliment, truly accepting it, felt akin to trying to make myself shorter. I could do nothing about being tall, and I could do nothing about the weird, uncomfortable feeling in my stomach whenever someone paid me a compliment. Adding, "It has pockets," helped deflect the attention away from the compliment and toward something absurd. Introducing absurdity into uncomfortable situations always helped me feel less uncomfortable. The same limo and driver from before met us at the hotel and drove us to the venue. I was so caught up in our easy conversation that I lost track of time, and before I knew it, we were at the Allenbach Methodist Church. Rex, for once, was not a groomsman, nor had he introduced the bride and groom. They were in their 60s, and members of his Aunt Sally's gym. Rex had known them both growing up and appeared more relaxed than I'd ever seen him, during the ceremony and after, at the start of the reception. Everyone wore tea dresses in Christmas colors, and I made a mental note to send Bernadette a thank you note. Even the bride's dress was in a similar style, and she wore a little hat with a fishnet veil, only both were snow white. I'd been to a few weddings in my time, and I felt like this one was by far the best. I loved how the groom gazed at his bride with open affection, how a tear had rolled down his cheek, and he swiped it away when she met him at the altar, and how they held hands throughout the entire ceremony. I sniffed against my own tears when they exchanged vows, and Rex handed me a handkerchief, while also pulling me close to his side for a one-armed hug. The reception took place in the church hall, which had been decorated for the Christmas season with evergreen garlands, white lights, and red ribbons. Rex's Aunt Sally and his Uncle Terry had been the matron of honor and the best man, so we didn't get a chance to say hi until the receiving line. "Oh, there you two are. I was keeping an eye out for you. Goodness gracious, Abigail, you are a sight!" Sally pulled me forward for a tight hug, but then quickly released me to smack her husband's shoulder. "Terry! Terry! Look! Look who it is!" Terry gave me a once-over, frowned, and then said,
"Who the hell are you?"
Both Rex and Sally laughed, and eventually so did Terry, holding out his hand.
"I'm sorry, I'm a jokester. Of course I know who you are. Welcome to the family. So glad someone finally took this guy off our hands."
He gestured to Rex with his thumb and winked at me. "Now y'all are still coming for Christmas, right?" Sally sent Rex a hard look, one that actually reminded me of him. Rex stiffened at my side. I grabbed his hand and squeezed. "Yes, ma'am, we'll be there. What can I bring?"
"Just bring yourself."
Sally waved away my offer to contribute. but I'll put you to work. I'm counting on you both to help me with the gingerbread houses and decorating Christmas cookies for the bake sale. And are you sure you can't stay the night?" Before we could respond, Terry piped in.
"I'll also need an elf just for the afternoon. Tamsin Kirkland is pregnant this year and can't fit into the costume. Do you have any elf experience, Abigail?"
I shook my head. "No, sir, but I'm happy to help if I can." He squeezed my hand, which he still held, and then released it.
"Good girl. Now get out of here. You two are holding up the line."
Rex patiently bent low for his aunt to give him a kiss, and then guided me to a corner of the reception hall, his arm slung around my waist.
"Are you sure you want to go to my aunt's?"
I nodded, and all at once my heart was in my throat. "I do. I want to go." He lifted an eyebrow.
"You'd be okay with the lying?"
Stepping out of his grip, I threaded our fingers together and smiled up at Rex, watching his face intently as I said, "Who says we'll be lying?" Lips parting, his face went adorably slack with surprise, then brightened with understanding.
"Are you?"
Biting my lip, I nodded quickly. "If you still want to give things a try, then I..." He cut me off with a kiss, his big hands wrapping around my waist and dragging me to him, his tongue seeking mine, his lips and teeth hungry for me. And I felt just the same, my hands mindlessly sliding into his jacket so I could hold on to his rock-hard sides, pressing my body closer, impatient for the feel of his heat, the smell of his skin.
"Oh, look at you two really up in your game."
Someone hit Rex on the shoulder and he, reluctantly and with an impatient growl, slowly pulled away, pressing his forehead to mine as he opened his eyes. Jaw grinding, Rex turned his head. Cyrus Malcolm stood just a few feet away, green eyes glittering with an amusement echoed in his smirk and the arch of his brow.
"So believable. You should be on the stage."
Rex, keeping me pressed to his chest, sent Cyrus a smile laced with irritation and something else.
"Didn't know if you'd be here."
"Of course I'm here. The bride is my aunt."
Rex inclined his head just slightly.
"Abby, you know Cyrus?"
I wiggled my fingers at my old friend, then slid my hand back under Rex's jacket. Cyrus laughed, looking exceptionally pleased.
"Finally figured it out, did you? I knew you would."
Rex continued to glare while smiling, just a little one, and I glanced between the two of them, confused. What did he figure out?
"That you were the one for him. You made matchmaking look so easy, Rex, but you made it so, so hard."
Cyrus's eyes drifted to me, warm and kind.
"Congratulations. I'm happy for you. Both of you."
For a third time that day, my eyes pricked with tears. I whispered, "Thank you, Cyrus." And I thought maybe I understood now. Cyrus had known how I felt about Rex in school. Then, when Rex had talked to him about me, he'd suggested fake dating me to Rex. Clearly, Cyrus had thought it was time for Rex to have a matchmaker of his own. Giving Rex another teasing punch, he sauntered away, grinning. I watched him go, then laughed as he reached over his shoulder to give himself a pat on the back. I turned to Rex, planning to ask him if my suspicions about Cyrus were true, but I lost myself as soon as our eyes connected, floating and drowning in the greenish-golden warmth of his gaze.
"We'll go slow," he said. "I want you to trust me."
"I do. I do trust you." His head tilted to the side, eyes narrowing.
"You want to trust me. Big difference."
"Rex."
"Let me prove it, okay?"
I glanced at the ceiling and sighed. "Fine. Whatever. But I trust you."
"And we'll go slow."
I narrowed my eyes. "Depends. How slow?" It was strange to attend a wedding with Rex as his date. I found myself falling into habits I'd created during earlier events, stepping back and saying nothing, inquiring as to whether he needed another drink, offering to take photos when a fan walked up. Rex kept pulling me forward, asking me how I was when I was quiet, and responding to my offer to fetch him a drink with a glower. Even in our hometown, Rex received requests for autographs. I wasn't surprised, but Rex's patience seemed to diminish with each person who approached, and he unleashed his menacing glare on more than one fan who'd asked me if I minded snapping a picture. "I told you I don't mind," I whispered, unnecessarily straightening his tie, just so I could put my hands on him and lean close enough for him to hear. His frown moved around the room.
"No more pictures."
"Rex, you're not my fucking assistant, Abby. You're my..." His mouth clamped together at the last minute, and a feeling coursed through me, one I couldn't identify, but it made me hot and cold and nervous. We needed to discuss exactly what I was, and what he was, and what we were doing. Now wasn't the time. I'd bring it up in the limo on the way home. His temple ticking, he snatched the empty cup in my hand.
"I will go get the drinks, not you."
"Okay." I lifted my hands as though I surrendered. "But I want extra lime in mine and only 3 pieces of ice, and make sure they're ice cubes, whole ones, not shaved or crushed." His brow relaxed, his gaze turning warm as he squinted teasingly.
"Anything else, babe?"
"If they're out of lime, I'll take 3 cherries, and if they don't have 3 cherries, then just 1 twist of lemon and no ice." Making an amused, scoffing sound, he placed a kiss on the corner of my mouth and left for the bar. I grinned after him, my eyes tracking him through the crowd and admiring his powerful body and the bespoke suit. The kiss on the corner of my mouth was as affectionate as he'd been since saying he wanted to take things slow. I'd have to figure out how to put his foot on the accelerator. Now that I'd made my decision, I wanted things to be full speed ahead, and his hands absolutely everywhere, all the time.
"Abigail."
I turned at the sound of my name, pleased to see Cyrus approaching. "Hello, matchmaker." He gave me a nod, but his eyes looked a little frantic.
"Hey, do me a favor. Don't look, but remember Graham Jefferson?"
"Yes." He lifted a disdainful eyebrow, his tone dry and droll.
"He keeps breaking out into monologues from Arthur Miller plays, and I'm avoiding him. I think he wants me to help him get an acting job. Talk to me for a minute. Act really interested in what I'm saying."
I shook my head. I'm not that good of an actress. He barked a short laugh, rolling his eyes.
"Okay, I walked into that, but I set you up with the love of your life. The least you can do is save me from Graham's Willie Loman."
My heart skipped a beat as Cyrus said, "love of your life." But I stifled the rebellious organ, inclining my head and widening my eyes. "Oh, wow. That's so interesting. I sure hope no one interrupts this very important conversation."
"That's more like it,"
he breathed out, clearly relieved.
"Thanks."
"You're welcome, but..." My eyes darted to the left and I spotted Graham Jefferson staring at Cyrus's back, his posture restless. Unless we keep talking, he's going to look for a way to cut in.
"Well, that's fine. We have plenty to talk about. For example, you putting in a good word for me with Rex. I want to be his best man when you two redo your wedding."
"Oh, you do?" I said lightly, covering another skip of my heart.
"Yes, I do. It'll piss off Alaric. I can't wait."
"Well, you might have to wait a while." Cyrus took a sip of his drink, a sidecar if I had to guess, and frowned.
"Why's that?"
"Rex wants to take things slow." My old friend dipped his head as his eyebrows rose high on his forehead.
"Does he?"
"I think he doesn't want to pressure me or something."
"Huh,"
he said, like this fascinated him.
"Are you getting a divorce so you can date? That's not something you hear every day."
Rex wants to take things slow, so maybe. Or maybe we should just take a break or something so we can just date.
But you don't know?
He changes the subject whenever I ask. My eyes instinctively sought out Rex, still standing in line for our drinks. He'd been accosted by another group of fans and was posing for selfies. Huh. Cyrus said again, rearing back a little, his eyes flickering over me. What? What is it? He opened his mouth but stopped himself, giving me the sense he was weighing his words. When he did finally speak, his cadence was careful and slow.
Have you ever asked Rex why he got drunk that night? The night he walked into your bar? He's not supposed to drink at all, and usually doesn't.
Kind of. I asked what it was that made him break the rules, and he never answered. I'd wondered about the drinking since, but not enough to push him about the subject beyond our short conversation on the plane to Richmond.
You should.
Cyrus lifted his drink toward me, as though to punctuate his suggestion. Then he frowned, huffed, and said,
Actually, I'll tell you why I think he got drunk. Then you can ask him and see what he says.
I wasn't so sure this was a good idea. Before I could make up my mind, Cyrus leaned forward and dropped his voice to a near whisper.
It's not that Clarence douchebag guy that upset him. At least I don't think it was. Rex being Rex, he didn't like that the man was disrespecting his friends. I get that. But I don't think that's what pushed Rex to partake that night when he never, never does during football season.
Then what do you think it was? I asked, too absorbed to wonder again whether it was a good idea.
I think it was being there with all his friends. So many of them happily married with kids and families. Alric and I might be the only two guys he knows who aren't married. And that's because we'd be shit husbands. But Rex, he's always wanted a family. Lots of kids. He wants Little League games and ballet performances.
My heart squeezed at the image Cyrus painted. Rex with his own hazel-eyed children. Tea parties and teaching them to ride bikes, playing dress-up and coaching sports teams.
I see you have similar aspirations.
Cyrus's grin was shaded with the barest brushing of mockery.
Good for you. Anyway, I think you drank to numb the envy, because deep down, Rex truly never believed it was going to happen for him.
He said that?
Not to me.
Cyrus placed a hand wide on his chest.
And not because I haven't pushed him about it. I'm enlightened. I talk about my feelings. He listens, but doesn't reciprocate. He's a caveman. No wonder, though, look at his father. But back to my theory.
Which is that Rex got drunk because he was envious of his happy friends?
More or less. Envious and depressed because he thought he'd never have a family. His dad and mom really fucked him up, you know. And the irony isn't lost on me. Rex came from a broken home and shitty parents and wants to be a parent and a partner. I come from the perfect family, am a commitment phobe, and think kids are gross.
Ignoring his self-assessment, I pondered this theory about Rex. I don't understand. Why didn't he think it would ever happen? By his own admission, everyone is always trying to set him up. Cyrus shrugged.
I don't know what to tell you, but I will tell you this juicy slice of gossip, because I'm guessing you don't know or haven't realized you were the first woman Rex ever dated where it wasn't someone setting him up. Even in high school, college, and after, all of his dates and girlfriends were setups. I think you even set him up with Rachel, right? At graduation?
I guess I did.
Yeah.
His eyes moved between mine, inspecting me.
That means you're the only person he's ever wanted to ask out without anyone else interfering.
I gave him a flat look. You interfered.
But not until after Rex said he'd wanted to ask you out and you'd shot him down before he could.
Cyrus raised a finger between us, pointing in my direction accusingly.
I only interfered and suggested the fake dating thing because it felt like fate to me. The two of you meeting like that after so many years?
Staring at my shoes, I struggled to process Cyrus's gossip and chewed on the inside of my lip. Rex had wanted to ask me out, I already knew that. But hearing the background and context made it feel more meaningful and real.
It was fate, Cyrus repeated. You and your volcano-sized crush for 13 years. Your ex leaving you with a pile of debt you were still paying off, and then you telling Rex you didn't date. And then him, with all his money, finally finding someone he just really liked for the first time. No one pushing him, no one setting it up, and needing a date to all his grand soirees. I had to interfere. It was fate. What else could it be?
Rex tricked me into a false sense of frustration. After our kiss in the reception hall, which he blithely blamed on the mistletoe hanging from the ceiling, and the one press of his lips on the corner of my mouth, all he did until dinner was hold my hand and give my knuckles chaste kisses. I thought, despairingly, that this was what I could expect from him. Weeks, if not months, of little pecks on benign parts of my skin. The idea seemed intolerable when I felt like I might burst into flames from wanting him so much, especially after my conversation with Cyrus. Conversations with Rex over the past weeks, things he'd said, seemed to come more sharply into focus. Rex wanted me. Me. Falling for you was like gravity. Prior to my conversation with Cyrus, I didn't believe those words. I'd wanted to. I was trying to, but I didn't. Until now. And with this new belief in the veracity of his claims came a rush of feelings and desires, all of which were frustrated by the fact that Rex had said he wanted to take things slow. But then, when we sat down for dinner and he pulled out my seat for me like he'd done at the Thanksgiving dinner, helping me scooch in and then moving his chair close to mine, his hand settled on the bare skin of my upper leg again, just above the band of my stockings, his fingers curling inward to my inner thigh. My eyes widened, but I didn't look at him this time. I picked up my water glass and pretended nothing was amiss. It was a buffet dinner, so when our table number was called, he stood, retrieved our food, and sat again. He repeated the same movements, only placing his hand higher, his fingertips brushing lightly against my underwear. Sucking in a shaky breath, I widened my legs to accommodate his fingers, thankful that our backs were to a corner and for the ballooning long tablecloth that completely concealed my lap. No one saw or seemed to notice when his hand skimmed even higher upon returning with our desserts, his pinky finger moving back and forth over the lace of my underwear, just as Rex took a bite of wedding cake. Slowly I scooched to the edge of my seat, spreading my legs.
Babe.
He turned his body toward me, lips in a secret smile, his clever eyes sharp.
You need to try this cake.
With the new angle, he shifted his hand, now using his knuckles to press harder and slide up and down. I shook my head, breathless and likely flushed. I think I've had too much. He considered me, his movements stilling. Then he made to withdraw his hand. I grabbed it, keeping it in place. Okay, one bite.
I don't want to force you.
No, I want it. Rex's attention moved over the high color on my cheeks and neck, his irises growing darker.
Or we could get it to go. Come on, Rex, what's your hurry? Stay a little longer, the bride and groom haven't danced yet.
Cyrus called from across the table. Rex turned toward Cyrus, taking his hand with him and draping his arm along the back of my chair. Finally, I could breathe and think and see. While Rex and Cyrus bantered back and forth good-naturedly, I wondered at myself, Why, I hadn't asked him to remove his hand earlier, here or during the Thanksgiving dinner with his team. I briefly considered that Rex had wanted it, so I let him because I wanted him to be happy. But that wasn't at all true. I hadn't been thinking about him. I'd been focused on me. I'd wanted it. Even though his hand placement had meant I'd spent most of dinner on pins and needles, I'd absolutely loved every second of it. I'd loved the excitement, the swooping swirls in my stomach and the deep ache at my center, the upheaval. What is happening to me? Am I an upheaval fan now? Do I need to add upheaval to my Christmas card list? No. I hadn't liked Declan's visit to the bar, or having to stay in that hotel room, or being forced to move out of my cozy little apartment. I hadn't liked our confrontation in that conference room on Thanksgiving. I could see clearly now that it had been necessary, and I could appreciate what it had accomplished, but just thinking about it, all the confessions and hard truths, it made my heart feel heavy. Maybe I like some upheaval, but not all upheaval, which makes me normal. Oh, they're breaking out the DJ! The woman next to Rex leaned around her husband to peer at the back of the dance floor, cutting into my thoughts. I hope it's all Christmas songs. They said they were thinking about it. Rex glanced at me, using his arm behind my chair to pull me closer.
Do you want to stay?
I leaned against him, enjoying the warmth and strength of him. Will we dance?
Do you want to?
He dipped his chin, his voice deep with meaning, echoing words that seemed familiar.
I will only do what you ask me to do.
Chapter 25. Engage people with what they expect. It is what they are able to discern and confirms their projections. It settles them into predictable patterns of response, occupying their minds while you wait for the extraordinary moment, that which they cannot anticipate. Sun Tzu, The Art of War. We stayed and we danced, but not for long. After three songs, I pulled Rex off the dance floor. He was such an exceptional dancer. Watching and feeling his body move against mine was making me crazy. He must have texted the limo driver while we said our goodbyes. The limo was waiting for us when we walked out of the hall, my arm beneath his jacket around his back, his arm low on my spine and hand on my hip. As I readied myself to broach the subject of continuing our marriage during the drive home, the limo driver exited the car. Rex waved him back.
Thanks, I got it, Vincent. Please raise the privacy screen.
Sure thing.
The old man tipped his fingers toward Rex in a salute and returned to the driver's seat. The privacy window was fully raised by the time Vincent left the church parking lot. I turned to Rex after buckling myself in, deciding now was the time to spell everything out and settle things between us. And his lips caught me unprepared. This time he couldn't blame the kiss on mistletoe, but it also wasn't hungry or needy. It was light and teasing. Infuriating. I shifted restlessly, lifting my hands to his strong jaw, hoping to encourage him to deepen the kiss. He wouldn't, but his hot palm came to my knee and slid up my leg, encouraging me to spread my thighs. He angled his chin just out of my straining reach and avidly stared down at me as his hand bunched my dress, his middle finger sliding up and down my center over the lace of my underwear.
"What do you want?"
he whispered, his free hand moving up my neck to fist in my hair.
"Do you want this?"
Rex punctuated the question by pulling aside my panties and rubbing a circle around my clit. But then he groaned, his movements stilling.
Fuck.
All of that, I said, too mindless to care he'd just discovered how wet I was. His teasing touches at the table had turned me on like a Christmas tree. I attempted to bring his mouth back to mine, but his neck was so freaking strong he didn't budge, no matter how much I tugged. Likewise, I squirmed in the seat, frustrated with myself for putting on the seatbelt.
Rex, Rex, I need you, please, I whined, abandoning his face and neck to slide my open palms down his shirt front,
catching my nails on the little white buttons on the way to his pants, and giving the hard length at his groin an enthusiastic stroke with both hands. He shuddered, a harsh, shaking breath, and abandoned my body to grab my wrists and hold me still.
No.
Rex.
No. You first.
I stopped reaching for him. I mean, who was I to argue with that? Nodding, I relaxed my arms, my wrists now lax. He positioned my hands on either side of my hips, then unfastened my seatbelt. Eyes on me, his mouth curved in a faint smile as he reached under my dress, hooked his fingers in my underwear, and slowly slid them down my legs, encouraging me to lift my hips.
"This is a fantasy of mine, Abby,"
he said, his lips a hair's breadth from my lips, his voice a rumble.
"You're my fantasy."
Deftly tucking the red lace in his shirt pocket, he returned his hands to my knees, smoothed them up my thighs, once more bunching my dress, leaving a shock of shivers and goosebumps in their wake, his fingers eventually digging into my bare hips.
"Come here."
Lifting me to his lap such that I straddled his legs, my knees on either side of his hips, he then turned his attention to the zipper at my back, pulling it down and unclasping my bra. His eyes on my lips, he whispered,
"Kiss me."
He curled his fingers into the straps of my dress and bra, dragging the fabric down on both sides and exposing my body to the cold air, my breasts feeling heavy, my nipples tight.
"Rex,"
I moaned, my head rocking back on my neck as his gaze lowered to my chest. He licked his lips, eyes flaring. Withdrawing my arms completely from the dress, he brought my hands to his shoulders before I could touch him anywhere else, pressing them down and instructing,
"Don't move these."
Immediately, my nails dug into his suit jacket. I tried to be loose, but my body was strung tight, my sex clenching as the backs of his knuckles softly brushed against the undersides of my breasts.
"Now you can ask me to make you feel good, because I'm the only one who can,"
he said solemnly, his voice holding a hint of menace, like he enjoyed seeing me so needy and wound up.
"And ask nicely."
My hips shifted restlessly over his pants, searching for friction, and I arched my back, offering myself, "Please.
Please.
Please touch me." He cracked a smile, his eyelids drooping, his thumbs lifting to drag mercilessly over my nipples.
"Be more specific."
A little cry escaped me before I managed, "Please make me come."
"Why?"
He leaned forward and lifted my right breast with his hand, his tongue drawing a tight circle around the center. My hips rolled on instinct, and I sucked a breath in between my teeth, my hands spasming on his shoulders.
"Because you're the only one who can,"
I choked out, hoping to God I'd said the magic words, because this was a slow, painful torture. His eyes on me, his hands, his tongue, all instruments of suffering. A sinister, satisfied grin claimed his features, and he leaned back as though preparing to watch a show, getting comfortable, the back of his neck connecting with the headrest, caressing a leisurely and massaging path downward to my waist, then hips. He gathered the layers of my skirt slowly. My breath hitched, my nails digging into his shoulders again.
"Please,"
I begged, my eyes fluttering closed against the assault of anticipation. Yes, I am aware he'd barely touched me, but I needed him. Begging seemed like the only course of action. His fingertips traced light circles on my inner thighs, moving so achingly slow, I whimpered.
"This is so much better,"
he said, a secretive smile in his voice. "Then what?"
"Then the fantasy."
With his words, he smoothed one hand around to grab my bare bottom and the fingers of the other dipped inside my entrance. My high-pitched moan was interrupted by a gasping breath as my eyes flew open. He watched me. Lips parted, eyelids drooping over expanding pupils, the tendons of his neck in sharp relief belaying his relaxed posture. The hand on my backside massaged with greedy, grasping movements. He added a second finger to his invasion, his thumb stroking up to my clit, circling it with slow precision. Needing so much more, I tilted my hips, rocking my body.
"Tell me how much you need this,"
he demanded, his voice a scrape as his eyes drifted to my breasts, where they bounced as I chased his skillful touch. "I need it. God, I need it so much." More whining, high-pitched confessions tumbled from my lips. I didn't recognize my voice, but the words were undoubtedly true. I was mad for him, and I was embarrassingly close already. The ache in my abdomen hurting so good. "I want you," I added, unprompted. "I need you." His hips jerked beneath me, his eyes flaring, and he drew in a shaking breath.
"God, fuck, Abby."
Suddenly, his hand on my backside had fisted in my hair, and he pulled my mouth down to his for a ravenous kiss, his thighs flexing, his thumb and fingers at my center pressing harder, moving faster. I came apart just like that, with my mouth gasping against his, needy, mindless sounds of bliss erupting from my chest. He withdrew his fingers all the way just to add a third as he returned, curling the long digits just slightly and pushing the base of his palm against my clit to rub with each inward stroke. I threw my head back, crying out again as a second release rocked through me, the rough friction just this side of pleasurable. I heard curse words leave my mouth, along with his name in high, keening breaths, my hands disobediently sliding up to the back of his head as I anchored myself to him with digging fingernails, riding one shuddering wave of ecstasy after another until a switch flipped and the gratification became overwhelming. "Stop, Rex. Stop, please. Too much." He did. Immediately, he removed his fingers and wrapped me in a tight, crushing embrace, his lips coming to my neck to kiss and lavish my skin with his tongue. It took a long time for me to stop shaking and for me to catch my breath and to circle back to earth. But thanks to his languid kisses, trailing from my ear to my collarbone, then lower to my breasts, the descent was a gradual one. I felt like I was sinking into a hot bath of his touch, somehow both gentle and demanding. He rumbled, like I tasted better than the wedding cake he'd offered me earlier, his hands grasping my hips. His lips were at my breast, sucking, his tongue swirling, his teeth scraping. He muttered something that sounded like, "Worth the wait." And I shivered. Suddenly cold.
"Oh, babe."
The words were heavily seasoned with an apology.
"Are you cold?"
Rex made a soft, tisking sound, hot breath spilling against my skin, moving his mouth to my other breast and shifting his hand to splay on the center of my back.
"Something for me to remedy. Hold on to me. That's it."
With weak arms, I did as I was told as he leaned forward, never ceasing his attentions to my breast. He easily lifted his hips up to peel off his jacket, then settled it on my shoulders without looking up, his fingers moving inside the coat to grip my bare skin and hold me in place so he could continue lavishing me with wet licks and bites. I swallowed around a renewed, swelling arousal, my breath speeding up again.
Rex.
Shh, let me finish.
Finish? A shaky laugh left me on an exhale, and I arched my back. My mind was a mess, darting in all different directions, but my body caged it, sought to silence it, demanding I do as he instructed. Ultimately, I did. I sat as still and silently as I could. The only noises in the limo were my labored, hitching breaths and the sounds of him devouring my skin. Eventually, somehow both too soon and innumerable torturous moments past my limit, he slid his lips upward. Holding me close once more, he whispered,
"Thank you,"
against my ear, and I could feel his smile. This time when I laughed, it was full of disbelief. "Thank you? Why are you thanking me?" My blood was still humming, my body's restiveness reawakened, just as intense as before. I needed more of him. I needed his skin and body in a bed so I could touch and taste him like I pleased, just as he'd done to me. And I didn't want to wait. Tonight, when we arrived at the hotel. Or maybe right now? In the limo? Rex pushed his fingers into my hair, angling my head back so we could lock eyes while still keeping hold of my body with his other arm.
"Thank you for letting me live my fantasy."
My eyes blinked rapidly, and I found I needed to back up another inch so I could see him better. He was serious. This, what had just happened, just now, that, had been a real fantasy for him. One that he'd been thinking about, one he'd wanted to experience in real life, with me. His words earlier, his talk of fantasy and what he wanted me to do, had sounded like nonsense to me at the time, not a script he was following, one he'd already played out in his head.